to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week as always is the one, the only, Randy Darf.
Hello everybody, glad to be back for another exciting football. I had a good weekend. I know some people also had great weekends and some people not so much, and some mixed feelings, I'm sure. Without further ado, we have two guests on this week. We have the one, the only, Rice, our favorite resident Indiana fan of Jimbotopia. And we have Outer, our favorite resident Penn State fan of Jimbotopia.
Howdy, howdy. Hello. It was an adventurous weekend.
Of course.
Glad to be back roughing it on the highway right now, but we do what we can to be back on the Gym Podcast.
I mean, this is kind of an emergency episode, wouldn't you say, Randy? Some things
went
down.
Yes, absolutely an emergency episode. The coaching carousel is picking up. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I think to start, should we just go ahead and get into some of the games from last week?
Real quick recap. There's two big ones we're going to talk about with our guests, but let's recap some of the games that don't involve the two teams in question here. Randy, other than, of course, obviously, Oregon, Indiana, and Penn State, Northwestern, what stood out to you this weekend?
South Florida beating North Texas 63-36. I think this clearly makes South Florida probably the G5 favorite. I know Navy's still undefeated. Memphis is also undefeated. But I just have this feeling about South Florida pulling away with the Group of Five slot. I mean, just because they have two Power Four wins, right?
Right on.
Bro, I know they have at least one.
No, I saw that game. It was a proper shellacking. It was kind of exciting in the first half, but in the second half, dude, South Florida just pulled completely ahead.
Wasn't it 21 points in 3.5 minutes or something like that?
Just obscene.
And the game was just over.
Yeah. So
something crazy. And that's what you have to be able to do. As a Group of Five team, I feel like that's one of those things that if you can quickly pull away from another Group of Five teams, it kind of elevates you to be not in the same category. I mean, the Florida Group of Five schools have a pretty good track record of being able to get that, I guess, brand awareness, respect, that if we're going to be honest, it's kind of necessary if you're trying to make playoff.
But also just the spotlight that game had being on a Friday night and all the attention everyone was giving that as like a G5 playoff potential game.
Agreed.
Exactly.
All eyes were on it. Another game that really stood out to me that maybe wasn't too consequential, but undefeated, number 4 ranked Ole Miss, barely survived Washington State at home. Did anyone else watch this and think, what is going on with Lane Kiffin?
These games happen. I'm not going to even put too much stock into it, to be honest. It's just a weird season. It's a weird sport, any given Saturday, right? They ended up winning, so it's hard to put too much of anything into it. But my biggest question is, why are they playing Washington State in middle of October? That's what really stood out to me more than anything about the game.
Yeah, it was weird to me and seeing that. What do you think, Alder?
Yeah, it's that Washington State independent schedule, I guess. I mean, that's one of those things where in the stadium, poor service, I get score updates like once every 45 minutes. I see that, I'm like, oh, it's funny. They'll probably win. Yeah. But no, the only takeaway I had from that was I thought it was funny that after the game, Lane Kiffin complained that the students weren't showing up and that's why it was maybe a close game.
I didn't hear that, but I could see him saying that.
That is kind of funny. And just for reference, everybody, Washington State did lose to a Group of Five school by 49 points earlier in the year. Granted, it was North Texas, who we just discussed, but still. Another game that caught my attention was the Red River rivalry, Texas beating Oklahoma 23-6. I did not watch that much of this game because I was busy watching another game we're about to talk about. But did anybody else here watch it? Anybody?
I was able to pay some attention to this game. And honestly, I wasn't super surprised, but it did feel like Texas got, I wouldn't call it lucky. They just got the swing of the turnover differential and obviously the punt return late on in the game. I think if these two teams met up again, it would be a lot closer. 23-6 isn't super fair to OU, but their offense was completely anemic. I can't lie. So, you know, I think if they met again, it would be closer. But at the same time, you know, Texas looked much improved. I think they played their best game of the season.
And that's with Arch Manning still not playing well, for being honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another game that I felt like I wanted to talk about. This has to be talked about. Georgia beating Auburn 20-10. I just got to say, as somebody that wanted both of these teams to lose, I feel like this is the best I could ever hope for. So watching that game.
I didn't see what happened at the end there. I hear there was like some controversy.
More than just what happened at the end. It was right at the end of the first half. So Auburn potentially scored a quarterback sneak 1 yard touchdown, but it was actually called a fumble. Controversial camera angle. And it's honestly hard to tell what actually went down. And then there were multiple stoppages in play for random penalties that were unexplained and not. And they were kind of ticky-tacky. Mm. And, like, the final 3 minutes of the half took, like, 45 minutes of real time with no injuries.
Jesus.
There was also the clapping timeout, which, you know, Kirby had a point. Kirby had a point. Okay, I'll give him that. That he had a point that Auburn's DBs were clapping, which is illegal. But you clearly see him make the timeout signal. And then he's like, I didn't make a timeout signal. What are you talking about? You got to call a penalty on somebody. That's either a penalty in Auburn, a delay of game in Georgia, or some sort of unsportsmanlike on Kirby for just blatantly lying about calling the timeout signal. But I think, you know, the biggest problem about this is the refs just don't explain why they're making these decisions. I feel like if they would just explain themselves a little bit, people wouldn't be calling for their heads as much. Because I feel like in a vacuum, if you look at things close up, they could probably get away with some of it if they would just explain why. Because to somebody that's just looking at the game, it looks terrible. But yeah.
SEC refs, folks. SEC refs.
I feel like I want to judge Georgia more for this game, but over time I've just learned, like, whenever you have a team going into Jordan-Hare at night, no matter what situation Auburn is in, I feel like they always have the ability to kind of just drag teams into these kinds of, you know, ugly games. And it's just hard for me over time, you know, judge a team for that because of just how their track record of doing exactly what they did, making this game ugly. Honestly, could have run away with it early.
But that's the thing about somebody like Hugh Freeze is that, like, it's easy to get your team motivated to play tough, physical, and hang in there whenever it's your rival, Georgia, Alabama, right? It's hard to get them motivated for kind of the more mediocre, so to speak, games and to do it week after week after week after week. And being able to do it week after week is what separates an okay coach from a great coach.
Right.
And yeah, Hugh Freeze just kind of is who he is. I'm not going to go into detail on that.
I agree on that front for sure. But Auburn, when, you know, it gets rocking over there, they're a tough team to really, you know, put to the floor.
I feel like a spaceship could, like, land on midfield in the middle of an Auburn game, and I just would not even bat an eye.
Would not be surprised, yeah.
Yeah, like, of course that happens during an Auburn game.
Oh, man. Man, the halftime show is really weird.
I don't know about the SEC folks thought on that, but the only time I've ever seen my team play at Jordan-Hare, they won by like 30 and all the fans left in the third quarter.
Whoa, that did happen. Shots fired. Wowee.
Hey, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
Last year or the year before.
I have to get the only jab I can. I think it was 2023.
Well, speaking of...
That tracks.
Our guest's teams, perhaps we could...
There's still Brian Harsin, so it doesn't quite count.
Perhaps you could discuss, get to the two biggest games of the week here, folks. I think let's start with...
I'll let Rice go first, and I should be good in a minute to carry on.
Okay. Rice, walk us through one of the best days of your life. How did it happen?
I'm still in disbelief a little bit, I'm not going to lie. Going into this, I was as low as a lot of the national media was on Indiana in this game. Again, it's just coming from a place of needing to see it after last year, you know, playing as well as they did against a weak schedule, getting, you know, shellacked by two really good teams at the end of the year. I just figured it would be a really tough ask to go into Autzen somewhere. You know, they hadn't lost in, 18 straight games. But, wow, I thought the defense played the best game I've seen in a long time from any defense. I was not very biased on that front. But they, you know, put Dante Moore in a blender. He never looked comfortable in the game. Got sacked 6 times, threw multiple picks. I thought executing-wise, they did so well top to bottom. If you told me before the game that Indiana would both throw a pick 6 and have 5 false start penalties in this game, I would be quite concerned, understandably, about like their ability to go win it. And even still, they went and, you know, won it by double digits. I know it didn't really play out like that, but to watch that game, it didn't feel fluky. It felt like, you know, Indiana was the better football team, which is insane. And I would not have guessed that in a million years coming out from that game.
I was going to say the exact same thing about it, is that Indiana just straight up dominated physically from start to finish and really made Dante Moore very uncomfortable, forcing mistakes. Like, that was another thing that stuck out to me, is you guys threw a really bad pick six and then still won by double digits at Autzen, which is pretty impressive. And to be honest, Jimbo, I know you're hesitant to pay you, but we have to give Indiana credit at this point. And you're gonna like what my reasoning is.
Oh.
Is I feel like Indiana is showing a bit of a blueprint for how a school that does have a wealthy, somewhat wealthy fan base and has resources. Yeah. They've had this money for NIL and to support the football program all this time. They just never had the motivation to. But as soon as Kurt Cignetti had a winning season, they're like, hey, we kind of like this. Let's dump some money into the program and keep winning. I feel like Wisconsin needs something similar to happen. Just have a coach, have a great, you know, maybe 10-2, 11-1 season, make the playoff, lose in the first round, whatever. Real, it's going to build up the hype train.
Yeah,
simple. Hey, there's a coach on the market. We're going to talk about that in a second. That could do it. With our resident Penn State fan, of course. But it's just really interesting to see Indiana pull this off. On one hand, you know, it is a little bit backed by money, but on the other hand, it is kind of nice to see a team have the ability to actually break through as a program, right, instead of just seeing the same teams only be the only ones that have any semblance at a chance of ever achieving anything real. Right. So it's good for the parity in the sport, I think, to see a team like Indiana do what they're doing.
Right. I only saw like some of the highlights of this game, but I think the thing that surprised me the most was how well Indiana did with the lines of scrimmage. Because I think the biggest thing that, like, I mean, there was a bunch of kind of small things, but I think one of the big reasons that Oregon beat Penn State was because they kind of controlled the lines that game, and the Penn State pass rush that had been like amazing last year didn't really get home at all that game. I mean, there were a lot of holdings, but like, it's the Big Ten, they don't call that. So like, true. You know, but Indiana was still able to get it done.
Rice, just to kind of like cap this game, would you say, true or false, this was the biggest win in Indiana football history?
I would just have to agree with that. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that would cap this, or at the very least, not in the last 60 years. I think it just has to be.
Top three Indiana folks. Top three Indiana. It's
for the first time in program history.
It's so literally this is the highest they've ever come so far. Now think about that.
So far,
easy schedule ahead.
We'll see.
Not to jinx anything, but very winnable games up ahead.
I think one thing we need to get to now is, let's go ahead and give out the this is their Super Bowl award. Jimbo, why don't you go first?
I'll be real quick and say it was the Iowa fans in front of me who were taking photos of the student section being empty in the fourth quarter. They were having a great time.
Not to kick a fellow down program, but did it really even fill up?
No, that's the thing, dude. It was actually full. Like, that's the thing that hurts the most. Okay. The stands were full, and the kids do stay around until jump around during the end of the third quarter. But the second jump around was over, it was empty. It was a mad rush to get out of there.
At least that's somewhat encouraging, because there were a lot of students that did not bother going to a certain game in State College.
Folks, should we talk about that? Is it time, Randy?
We still have to give out the awards. We still have to finish the awards.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get the awards.
I'm going to give my This Was Their Super Bowl award to USC for beating Michigan 31-13. They're like 5-1. They're 5-1 now. They beat Michigan, and I don't know. It feels like they're too happy about this. Just something seems off about USC and Lincoln Riley.
I'll jump in quickly, because this is what I was going to say too. Like, last year, the whole narrative with USC was they couldn't hang in the Big Ten because they weren't physical, and like, they lost to Minnesota, and like, Michigan ran it down their throats to win their game. So like, all I've seen from them is like this is the narrative turning because we beat Michigan, the physical team, and like they couldn't hang. And like, dog, like it's still Michigan, but like they're not world beaters. Like,
not anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
And their defense wasn't exactly tough this year. I mean, they let up 34 to Illinois, 31 to Michigan State, 17 to Purdue, 20 to an FCS school, 13 to another FCS school. So, I mean, come on. Rice, do you have this was their Super Bowl award nominee?
I'm gonna stretch back into the past and just accuse Florida State finally of having their Super Bowl against Alabama week one. Clearly that's the only game they prepared for all season.
I tried to tell people I couldn't say it too loud. I have to kind of hedge my bets a little bit, but I think this actually leads me into our next award we need to give out, the Elephant in the Room Award, because I was going to give that to Florida State. They are now 3-3 overall, 0-3 in the ACC. Do we think Florida State joins the coaching carousel sometime soon this year?
Yes.
I mean, like, everything's crazy. I just want to say yes, but, like, they owe Norvell even more than Franklin was owed. Like I feel like they might wait one more year. I think it's in the 60s. Because, like, he got his contract, like, only 2 years ago.
Oh, right.
So it's still a lot on it.
Folks,
it's crazy because it was, like, 15 days ago we saw James Franklin on College Game Day, wearing his little button, very nice suit.
Yeah.
Everybody was hyped for the wideout. This was the game. And then 15 days later, he's fired.
Mark Norvell's buyout, by the way, $72 million. So I take back what I said. No. Jesus, oh, that's a lot of money.
That's almost as much as Jimbo Fisher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of which, segue, my elephant in the room. I hate to say it, folks. Texas A&M, undefeated, ranked number 4, 6-0. Pretty manageable schedule, we'll say, at least for SEC standards. It's scary, guys. It's October and they haven't like fallen off yet. Like, should we be concerned about Texas A&M?
Be concerned. Let me tell you why. I've watched them plenty to know not to fall for them. You have to remember, this is who they've played. They did have the Notre Dame win when Notre Dame was still struggling early in the season. They've beaten Auburn at home, Mississippi State at home, Florida at home. It's not exactly a murderer's row, and they still have to go at LSU, at Missouri, which is going to be a tough game, and even at Texas is going to be a tough game because Texas has at least shown that they will get up for one of those types of games.
True.
So I'm just saying, I don't buy. They're going to finish 8-4. Just accept it.
All right.
Maybe 9.
I'm a little cautious on them, just for the sake of the schedule looks manageable, but at the same time, Arkansas this week, Arkansas is broken, but you got to go on the road. You have to go on the road to LSU. You have to go on the road to Missouri. You have to go on the road to Texas. That's four road trips that aren't particularly easy whatsoever. I don't think they're, like, fraudulent necessarily. I could just see them going, like, occurring two losses while still being a really good, like, playoff-level team.
Sure.
But the wheels could fall off.
They
and that's
wheel.
What I'm hoping for.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
They play 5 of the bottom 6 teams in the SEC this year. They've got,
lucky.
Outer, did you have a recipient for the award?
I'll use it to give a quick positive shout out since I didn't have a whole lot to look through before this, but I'll say Navy, quietly 6-0. I don't think they've really played anybody, but I have not heard a single thing about them being 6-0 from anywhere.
You can hear Randy
and
typing.
Their schedule is about to get very difficult, so I don't think they will stay 6-0, but just give a little positive G5 shout-out while it's there. I believe they have, like, USF and Notre Dame and Memphis on deck, so.
It gets tough.
Yeah, tough road ahead, but, you know. Figured I'd give a little positive shout out while they still have the hype going, or I guess build some hype since no one seems to mention it.
I didn't know they were 6-0, but shame on me for not supporting the troops, I guess. They'll be fun to watch, especially if they can remain undefeated until November 8th when they go to Notre Dame. That would probably be a ranked matchup, maybe even like a game day kind of a showdown. So
yeah, because I know the polls are they usually don't like to touch the G5 teams unless they beat a P5 out of conference early, but once they start getting up to 7 or 8 and 0, it's a little harder to ignore.
True.
I think this leads us into our next discussion topic. We have to discuss the coaching carousel. So, as everybody knows, there was a big firing this weekend. UAB.
Oh, come on. No.
Okay.
We got to talk.
Wait. There's an opening at Oregon State, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the Tennessee Titans. So, there's a lot going on here. But how about this? I mean, Outer, you've obviously joined us today. It sounds like you went to the game. Can you just like walk us through everything?
Yeah. It's going to take a lot more to keep me away from the games, but hopefully we don't hit that point this year. I guess I'll start with kind of my initial thoughts, like going into this season, like, you know, my perspective on all this hype that was coming in. I thought this team would be really good. I never thought they'd win like the national title just because I don't think a team coached by Jim Franklin is capable of winning 4 playoff games in a row, but I certainly thought they'd be almost a lock to be there. And I definitely thought there was a really good chance that they could win the Big Ten this year, especially, you know, just a 1-game stage in Indianapolis. But, you know, that I think my own expectations kind of got drawn back pretty quickly after watching the first 3 cupcake out of conference games, Nevada, FIU, and Villanova. Like, the defense didn't play well the first game, but was lights out the second two. But, you know, it's hard to tell against, you know, a level of competition like that. But the offense just had no improvement at all. If anything, it looked noticeably worse than an already questionable offense last year. Like, this was supposed to be the year for the offense, second year with Kolonecki as a coordinator. You know, Aller is what he is, but, you know, he can still be a quarterback that wins plenty of games. He's not going to elevate the team to, like, carry them to victory in a big one, but he's usually good enough that he can be a plenty serviceable quarterback and lean on the run game. Well, the two running backs, Singleton and Allen, Allen still looks really good, but Singleton looks like he's disappeared. Like, he was a Big Ten freshman of the year a couple years ago. Like, you know, he's a 1,000-yard back last year, but he just hasn't shown up. And the offensive line returned 4 out of 5 starters, and they haven't looked any better. So I kind of realized pretty quickly that things weren't going to be good there. And then the Oregon game was the Oregon game. And it's funny how one or two things bounce differently. The knee doesn't touch the blade of grass on the fumble, or in the overtime with Penn State in the lead, Dante Moore fumbles the ball and it bounces right back into his lap. If Penn State scoops that, he wins and James Franklin probably has a job. So I think I was kind of like the players and thinking that this season was the Oregon game, because if you can't win that one, you weren't going to win the bigger ones later. And I think the players took that too much to heart and kind of quit after that. So that's kind of how we are where we are now with the 2 losses that followed after. And I think I was a little surprised to see Franklin go this early, because I thought they'd just wait to finish the year because of like how big the buyout is. But I am hearing rumblings that his buyout is offset by if he gets hired at another school. So whatever another school hires and pays him, Penn State doesn't have to pay.
I just got chills.
So what is initially a $49 million buyout could realistically end up being less than half of that, which in that case, I think getting rid of him, if that is the case, I think getting rid of him now was the right decision. Put yourself on the market early, show you're serious about winning, and, you know, the season's already over from... It was a, you know, championship or bust year, and it busted really hard. So that's kind of where I stand. And it's funny seeing the national narrative switch so quickly from, you know, Franklin's a clown, he's a fraud, he doesn't win the big games, like, ha ha ha, to now, why would you fire him? He wins 10 games a year. Like, kind of make up your mind. But
reminds me of Paul Chryst when we fired him.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll step up my
soapbox. I was going to ask if you were happy with the decision to fire him, if you think it was the right move.
I think it was now. Before this year, I'd call myself a very reluctant Franklin defender. I wasn't out there vocalizing it because it was extremely frustrating, but also I recognize his sustained level of success, and you keep him because how many coaches are realistically going to win you 10 games a year? But he got there because he never lost the games he was supposed to win. But this year, that clearly doesn't happen. He looked broken after the Northwestern game. Like, the whole team just 1,000-yard stares walking off the field. Like, he just, you know, it was kind of the thing of, like, this has run its course and he's not going to get it back. And I think everyone kind of around the program, not just the crazy fans, realize that.
I think that that's fair enough. I will say, just as a personal note, like, it's definitely more enjoyable to have a coach that's very good in those big games. Like, DeBoer is, what, 10-1 versus the top 10?
Yeah.
I would rather have that and lose to a stinker to Vanderbilt than have the opposite in James Franklin. Because, like, at least, you know, a coach like DeBoer has shown that he can win the big games and he will win you the big games. And you have to show that you can get over that hump.
Yeah, like, there's been plenty of success. Like, you know, I think he's won five or six New Year's Six Bowls in the last 10 years, like four or five top 10 finishes. That's basically every other year. But even in all that success, after the first year he broke out and won the Big Ten, like, there isn't really like that moment that like fans point to as like, you know, a high point or like a good memory. It's just a lot of like, you know, good wins and then a whole bunch of disappointing losses. There's nothing really to like, you know, there's no milestone memory moment for a lot of fans from that.
Right. Do you have anybody in mind that you would like to take over for Penn State?
I mean, the obvious answer is Cignetti, but I don't think that's a likely option. And I say that quickly before Rice kind of cuts me off here from that. But, you know, I think a lot of Penn State fans can read the room with that. Just he was making basically just as much as Franklin was, and with the state of how much money they just had to spend to get rid of Franklin, I don't know how much they're gonna want to spend for another guaranteed contract like that. And I mean, he's like the money's no option guy, and I'm sure there's gonna be plenty of boosters that pass the hat to try to get him, because you gotta at least try. But I don't think it's gonna happen. I think the most likely option is obviously Matt Rhule. I'm not the biggest fan of that. I don't think he'd be bad, but I also don't think you know, do a $40 million buyout to get rid of James Franklin just to get Matt Rhule, who's basically program builder James Franklin, but slightly less success.
I was thinking Matt Campbell would be a great option.
Yeah,
I think at least have another Matt.
Yeah, another Matt on the carousel. I've seen Eli Drinkwitz's name from Missouri thrown around quite a bit, and I think that could be intriguing. I know it's Missouri, so the expectations aren't the same. So the only thing that concerns me a little bit about that is the kind of lack of like a peak he's had from that program. But I think it'd be pretty good. I think Kenny Dillingham at Arizona would also be an interesting and fun choice. But I think, I don't know, I just have a gut feeling it's going to be Matt Rhule. I'm not the biggest fan of that, but just everything that's been going on with that, and the fact that the Penn State AD, Pat Kraft, he says he's committed to winning, and I believe it a whole lot more than the old AD that was there. But he was the coach at Temple when Matt Rhule was at Temple, and apparently they're pretty good friends. Combine that with Matt Rhule being a state college, grew up in state college, was a walk-on at Penn State. His parents still live in state college. Everything points to him wanting to come back. So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, he'll probably take it, if I'm being honest. I was going to say Eli Drinkwitz would actually be a great hire, because I've seen him. And he's built up Missouri to a point where Missouri, of all places, the resident SEC team that we kind of call the odd man out and make fun of for quote unquote not fitting in, he's actually turned them into a super physical team on both lines of scrimmage at Missouri, of all places, to the point that Missouri is legitimately a tougher physical test for us than Georgia was.
Wow.
That's a little encouraging hearing that from the SEC perspective.
I did just want to say I think it's just crazy how it all panned out. I was extremely high on Penn State heading into the season. I did, maybe this is just outing myself as not knowing well, but I had them as my as a team in my national championship preseason. And if you told me that Franklin would be out by mid-October, would have just called you crazy.
Yeah,
I think that's how most of us felt.
One final thing regarding the coaching carousel. I just want to bring it back to you, Rice, here. You know, the name came up, Kurt Cignetti. Are you concerned at all, just in general, even not necessarily Penn State, but given Kurt's success, are you worried about him potentially leaving Indiana, or do you think he's like a lifer at this point?
I think it's a mixed bag. I would lean mostly, I think he will be a lifer here. I think a lot of people do underestimate, at least at the national level, how much money Indiana has. I'm not saying our bag is like insane or like beyond what Penn State could spend or any other major school. I just think that given that he's a 64-year-old already on a long contract that is about, I mean, he's going to get offered even more money from Indiana this offseason no matter what. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be surprised to see somebody come in with like a god offer, $15 million offer, regardless of it's Penn State, like Florida, or somebody else that might be on the coaching carousel this year.
I think an underrated aspect of that too is for Cignetti at a place like Indiana that hasn't had a lot of historical football success. He's going to be given full control of the program. He really doesn't have to answer to anybody, and he's allowed to do things the way he wants. It gets a little bit more complicated when you go to a place that's going to have boosters that really want to have their hand in the pot, rather than Indiana, where they're just going to be like, hey, you won games, do your thing. Whatever you want to do, we'll say yes to and write the check. No questions asked.
I agree. I think there's maybe it's, you know, I'm overvaluing it because I'm biased, but I would give it like an 80% shot he stays. I think it would take, you know, unless he really craves wanting to go back to Pennsylvania, or, you know, feels like he has something to prove at the national level that for some reason he doesn't, you know, feel like he can accomplish in Indiana.
All right. So I think this leads us to, without further ado, the next week's matchups. We have some really good games coming up this week that are really going to shake out some of these conference fights, I guess, and to see who's, you know, potentially fighting for the playoff spot. We're going to make these, I guess, quick picks, maybe say one sentence each about the game. Sure. So I'm just going to literally go down the list, say their records, and give a prediction. And there we go. So I'm going to start with Friday night. We have 4-1, only one loss to Louisville, going to Miami, who is undefeated, 5-0, ranked number 2. Do we think Louisville has any shot?
No. It's a trap game.
If this was old Miami.
Yeah, the fact that it's a trap game, it means Miami's going to win. Like, this is, we've discussed this. It's a fact.
It's in Miami. Maybe if it was in Louisville, but it's in Miami.
I'm not going to run Louisville at all.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I tend to agree. Also on Friday night, we have 5-1 Nebraska going to 4-2 Minnesota. Is Minnesota gonna win this game, go 5-2, and start trying to build a playoff hype?
Minnesota lock of the week. Matt Rule's distracted.
Yes, I got you. Stole mine. How dare you? But yes, I agree. After you told me the Matt Rule stuff, my first thought was, who's Nebraska play next week? Sure enough, Minnesota. They're gonna win this one.
My gut feeling would say Nebraska, but at the same time, it would be really funny, so I think I'm going to pick Minnesota here outright.
There you go.
I think I'm also going to pick Minnesota as well for the reasons you guys listed. Big distraction, and who knows if he has one foot out the door but has to finish out the season. You know how it is.
Right.
PJ Fleck building his resume for that Auburn job.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that'd be so funny. I would love it so much. Okay. Anyway,
roll the boat.
There's one of those things where I'm just like, I'm so glad my enemies are cringe.
Same. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Speaking of cringe enemies, we have Saturday morning, LSU 5-1 quietly at 5-1 Vanderbilt. I'm going to go ahead and give my lock of the week and say Vanderbilt wins the game by 2 scores.
Wow. Yeah. I think LSU is going to win this one. I'm sorry, Randy. Vanderbilt, their Super Bowl was the Bama game, and they lost it. So I think they can't slay the giant. LSU wins this one.
I think it's just, if you take a step back, it's insane that Vanderbilt is favored in this game. It's only by like 2 points, but like, just say that sentence. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think LSU will win. Just, I don't know, maybe the name brands are stuck too much in my head, but I need to see Vanderbilt win one of these, like, as a favorite, which I don't think they have, at least not in a game this close.
LSU has put up more than 23 points one time this season, and it was against Southeast Louisiana. Give me the Commodores by 15 points.
Oh my god, is that real? I'm looking exactly this up.
So,
oh my god,
that's the thing. So here's the thing, is Vanderbilt has a better offensive line, Vanderbilt has a better defensive line, Vanderbilt has a better quarterback. The only real, like, weak point you can point to for Vanderbilt is their secondary. And let's just be honest here. LSU is not going to be able to take advantage of that. Like, it's crazy to see Vanderbilt favored by two against the top 10 team.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're a fluky team. I don't think we were the I mean, we were the Super Bowl, but I don't think that's going to mean anything like it did for Florida State, if that makes sense. Like, they're not going to just make it a one-game season. They're sure. They're pretty motivated. And I think it comes from the top down with Diego Pavia. Like, he's got as much trash as I've talked about him. They are coming off a bye week, too, by the way. As much trash as I've talked about him, I have to give him credit that he's got, like, an attitude about him. He's cocky. And, you know, it's going to carry through these games. He's not going to just roll over or, you know.
Yeah, I'm very low on LSU, and I agree with your point there. I think Pavia being the leader of that team, like, they're going to follow as he goes, and I think having the confidence heading into a game like that, yeah, I can't see it for LSU. They just haven't gotten it done on offense this year. That defense is really good, but Vanderbilt's offense has been very, very good this year, and the only team, if I can remember correctly, that really slowed him down at all was Bama. That on the road is very understandable.
Exactly. One quick note before we move on is I wanted to say, based on the criteria of the award, I really do think the Heisman, I'm a little biased. It still probably should go to Diego Pavia just because of what he's done for the program as a whole. Obviously, I want Ty Simpson to win it, but I can see like a bit of Bama fatigue of sorts setting in. I mean, there's a good case for Ty Simpson.
Fernando Mendoza.
He's building the transition to actually create the DeBoer offense and show that he's not a Phoenix merchant, kind of squash some narratives about him, this and that. And there, of course, Fernando Mendoza.
I'm sorry.
I didn't want to talk about the Heisman too much this week. I didn't want to talk about
it. We'll get
Fernando Mendoza is also in it.
No, I think it's between Mendoza and Simpson.
There you fair enough. I would not disagree.
Runners at the moment.
Also in the morning, I kind of wanted to touch on this. We have number 12 undefeated Georgia Tech at Duke, 4-2. Duke is still undefeated in the ACC, 3-0 in conference. They did lose to Tulane and Illinois, but I just think this could be a very interesting game because Duke has shown some flashes of being able to be good. So it's interesting, you know. Yeah. Do you think Duke has any chance? And do you think Georgia Tech, if they win this game, are they officially just considered at this point a better program than Georgia?
No, don't get ahead of yourself.
They are tough and physical, and they win tough, gritty games. They have
but they can't beat Georgia, though. But they can't beat Georgia 1-on-1.
They were robbed of it last year, but I digress. Anyway.
They were robbed, but yeah. I think they actually need to do it to say that, but I really hope it happens.
Same.
Saying Duke favored in this game is very surprising. Maybe I'm undervaluing them a little bit, but I think Brent Key offense versus Manny Diaz defense is one of the more entertaining matchups you could possibly get.
That's going to be fun.
That is going to be a lot of fun. I do like Georgia Tech a lot here. I just think when you have a guy like Haynes King, who just kind of runs his head into a wall in these kinds of like big games, he's going to account for 80% of their offense. He might accumulate CTE while doing it, but he will carry them.
There you go.
I do like to see players play like that. Moving on, now we have the afternoon games at 2:30. We have Ohio State at Wisconsin.
No, guys.
Does Wisconsin have any shot here? Luke Fickell
finally get fired for?
I pray to God this is the one. Guys,
here's my theory. I have a theory. Hear me out on this. I think they were waiting until after the Ohio State game to not throw the interim to the Wolves.
Isn't there a bye after Ohio State, too?
I like that. Randy, I like that. Hold up. Wait, you're talking sense to me right now.
I'm talking sense. And James Franklin's available? I mean, a good change of scenery might be good for both parties.
Thing is, we then play at Oregon for our game after that. Not that Oregon's like a great team. We all know that now. But still, like, that's a pretty tough task.
Here's a bye in between?
Guys, we all remember 59-0. We all remember that. Who can forget? Okay. I will be happy if we can keep this within 59-0 territory. This is going to be, guys, keep in mind, I will be at the game. When you're seeing the score, you know, ticker on the bottom of your screen and it's like Ohio State 72, Wisconsin nothing, I am there. Keep that in mind. Just remember. So yes, I hope this is the game, Randy. I pray this is the game that he's gone. It's going to be rough.
All right. Also at 2:30, we have undefeated Ole Miss at 5-1 Georgia. I just got to be honest here. I think Ole Miss wins this fairly. I don't want to say comfortably. But I think it's just clear that they're the better, more skilled team.
They are, but Georgia has plot armor. Georgia has plot armor.
Ole Miss beat them last year.
I have to agree.
He agrees.
I have to agree. Like I think Ole Miss, like at a glance, is a better team at this point in time. But at the same time, they've got to go into Athens and win that kind of game. I would be surprised if they won. And I would go as far as to say as I think Georgia probably wins this game by two scores, just like flash in the pan. No one really knows how they do it because they don't look good in their other games. But it's games like this where their plot armor is just in full effect.
I agree with Rice. Yeah. Ole Miss beating Georgia last year was like one of the most wrong I was about like predicting a certain game, at least that I can remember last year. And like, I don't know, I could easily be wrong again this time, but I feel like Kirby, I feel like that loss got under his skin and he probably has going to get the team a little extra fired up for this game. Plus they're at home. They got the plot armor. Like they only lose home games to Alabama and this is in Alabama. So
true.
To Georgia's credit, they are going to be desperate and back against the wall. I think they're going to show up for this. I mean, y'all are kind of convincing me. One thing I wanted to note is that Kirby Smart is actually a great coach, obviously. But I'm saying Georgia does not necessarily have this extreme level of talent discrepancy that they used to have. And they're pretty weak at a lot of positions, like on defense. Their quarterback's usually not very good. Mm-hmm. But he always knows how to engineer a team and engineer wins. And that's what really matters. So, like, he's not doing more with less, per se, but he knows how to make position groups that look weak on paper, mm-hmm. you know, compared to how they should be, and just somehow win games. It's kind of hard to explain, but that's just what I see from Georgia, vibes-wise.
Interesting.
We also have Texas Tech at Arizona State. Arizona State is 4-2. Texas Tech is undefeated. Is it clear to everybody else that Texas Tech is emerging as the new perennial Big 12 powerhouse program to help elevate the conference, given their money that is now rolling into the program and their investment in it?
They're looking a little Mahomey. Yeah. I think so.
I think they're locked for the playoff this year. I'll hold off on saying perennial power till they repeat it, because I guess the thing is with spending that much portal money is you can always get a bad batch of guys, kind of like what happened to Florida State, although I don't think their floor will be that low. But I think for this year, they're definitely the lock from that conference to get in.
Real, I want to make a note about the portal. So I don't think it's like when you get a bad batch of portal, I don't think it's necessarily just luck of the draw. I think like coaches are getting really good at evaluating and scouting portal talent and knowing who to get, who to let go, addition by subtraction, and knowing who's going to really fit their culture. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's an accident that the same teams that get talent in the portal and they all of a sudden succeed are always the same teams that do that. And the teams that get talent from the portal and then just fail with them are always the same teams.
Yeah, I think Tech this year, I would stop on the whole, same with Outer, on the whole perennial power thing, just because honestly, I'm not that convinced by McGuire as a head coach just yet. I think that just really matters long-term, no matter what your financial situation is. But I think this iteration of Texas Tech is a legitimate contender. Their metrics are simply ridiculous right now. I know they've still kind of been flying off the radar despite their number 7 ranking, but I feel like they're going to surprise a lot of people in December once the playoffs start and they get matched up against a team that's probably been in the spotlight a little bit more this year. They've been flattening teams.
True.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I like them against whatever like third place SEC team they get put against that probably has a questionable offense.
I'm with True. You. Jimbo?
No, I'm totally with you. I think Texas Tech, they're going to win every game this year, dude. At least regular season, they're going undefeated. So lock me in.
All right, fair enough. In the nighttime slot now, we have Tennessee 5-1 with one conference loss at Alabama 6:30. Actually, I'm going to defer to you guys on this just to hear what you guys think. I just want to hear it from you.
Randy, have fun with the revenge game. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think the real question is, how does Tennessee find a heartbreaking way to lose this game?
Is it a field goal? Is it like a pick six? Like, because Alabama's going to win, but it'll be by like 3 to 7 points. That's how they're doing it lately. You notice that?
I do. There's actually a really good reason for that. I've noticed since watching DeBoer teams now, it's because he somehow plays this ball control, time of possession, chew the clock offense, where you'll have just like in the game, you'll have like three or four 9 minute, 15 play drives while passing the ball. And it's just something I've never really seen before. Maybe it's more common in the NFL, but I see it especially pronounced in like an exaggerated version of it with DeBoer's offense. So like, yeah, we have these close games that are 3 or 7 points. But like, for example, the Missouri game, to be honest, it was kind of nervous at the end, but it never felt like we were in true threat to lose mode, if that makes sense, even though it was close at the end.
We all knew what would happen, but it was like, it could happen, it won't. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah, my only stance, my stance for this game is just asking Randy, how much time is going to be left on the clock when you start smoking the cigars?
If we wait till we're at least kneeling it down, we don't light them up early. Or like sometimes, a lot of times, because it's Tennessee, they'll like throw a really bad pick or something with like 5 minutes left while we're up by 5 touchdowns. That would happen a lot. We'd go ahead and start. Some people would at least, but a lot of people wait till the clock at zero.
Yeah, Tennessee has played 3 SEC games. All of them have been decided by one score. 2 of them have gone to overtime. I feel like Alabama's favored by 8.5 as of now. I feel like I would take Tennessee spread, but Alabama money line, just on the basis of these are two teams that have just have a track record of playing really consistently tight games.
Randy, does the baby get the cigar?
We could get her like a little gummy cigar.
Just a little puff.
Okay,
all right.
Got to start her early, right?
Yeah.
So we have also at 6:30, we have USC 5-1, very quiet, at 4-2 Notre Dame. Do you think this is Notre Dame's get right, prove they're still in contention game? Or do you think USC wins?
Yes. Wait, yes to Notre Dame winning. Listen, they had a couple of close losses, but in hindsight, that loss to Miami and Texas A&M is like probably the two best losses you could have by a total of 4 combined points against the number 2 and number 4 teams in the country. They've since looked really good. They've been, again, like crushing pretty much every opponent since then. They had, you know, they got Sam Pittman fired earlier on in the season. I think that this is going to be a tough game for sure. But like we said earlier, guys, USC, their biggest win was against a kind of weak Michigan team. Notre Dame's talented. They're fired up. They're hungry. I think they win a big game here at home.
Yeah, I think it's Notre Dame to win because USC, like I said earlier, kind of just had their Super Bowl last week. So like, I think they're probably maybe going to be feeling themselves a little too much. And if you remember, like USC was horrible traveling east last year.
True.
And their loss this year was traveling to Illinois. So I think Lincoln Riley just hasn't figured out that travel thing yet. And that combined with them playing a tough team, I don't think they'll get it done. Unfortunately, I think Notre Dame picks up the big win.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I hate admitting it, but yeah, Notre Dame has looked fantastic since week 2. They bounced back in a big way. I mean, I think this is a huge resume builder for them. Obviously, it is, you know, basically this is their ticket to the college football playoff. They need this. They, you know, no doubt about it. I just can't see a world, barring a really catastrophic game, where they come out looking flat at home against a rival.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I have to agree with all of you guys.
Yeah, I do think we should.
Marcus Freeman, go ahead. Marcus Freeman's a good coach. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, no, he is. Yeah, we like Marcus Freeman on the show. I do think we should.
He somehow wants the Penn State hot boards.
I was gonna say, I feel like we should discuss both Penn State and Indiana. They kind of have low key
games
on
Peacock,
this week, but both are on Peacock. Well, this episode is brought to you by Peacock. Use promo code Jimbo20. I'm just gonna stop that. Let's start with how about the less interesting one, because we know how this one's going to end, but I want to know how it ends. Number 3, Indiana, can you believe it, takes on Michigan State at home. They're currently favored by 27.5 points. Do you feel 27.5 points good about Indiana's chances this week?
I saw that line last night and my jaw like actually dropped. I recollected like about 30 seconds later, and I say I can't even disagree with it. Reportedly, Chiles didn't finish their game against UCLA. I think that's factoring into it a little bit. I would take IU minus 27.5.
I like it too.
I agree.
As well. Yeah, Michigan State.
I don't think it's good. Indiana's gonna name their score.
Yeah. Michigan State would have to be a severe hangover team. True.
Like, it would have to be a severe, severe hangover game. And honestly, I trust Fignetti to avoid that because he's angry at the world 24/7.
It's a trophy game.
They got to get up for it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Indiana's a lock, folks. Let's discuss Penn State, though. Listen, I'll say this, man. Iowa's not good, but they do have a chance to beat bad teams. Do you think Penn State has a rebound game here in the wake of the firing?
I think there's a little bigger of a chance than most people would think. Like, the new interim, Terry, I think it's Terry Smith, he's played at Penn State. He's been at Penn State with Franklin the last 14 years. He cares about the school. So, like, I think he's going to at least have the players up, like, somewhat playing for care. But I think we'll figure out pretty early on if that's the case or not. You know, we didn't even mention Drew Auer being out for the season, but honestly, with how the season started, I'm not sure it matters a whole lot. Like, yeah, he's better than the backup. Grunkmeyer is a redshirt freshman. He's only played garbage time, but, you know, I don't really have any expectations either way. I can easily see Penn State pulling one out close or Iowa kind of just beating up a team that's quit. I'm just glad the game's on Peacock, so
no one will watch.
Even if it does go badly, no one will see it because, you know, losing to Iowa, there are a few things worse than that.
Honestly really interested in that game. I like, partially because we do play at Penn State and I want to see how they bounce back a little bit. But, like, I just think from there's so many ways you can take, you know, a coach getting fired. You could take the UCLA route. Now, I don't think that they're going to have that dead count bounce, but at the same time, you go in and beat Iowa and Kinnick. It's not an easy place to win, especially that game's at night, right?
Yeah, but hey, we're not ranked anymore, so.
Yeah, maybe not.
But yeah, I think it'll be interesting, but also, like, you know, I've rambled enough about this team doesn't really have a whole lot to play for other than keeping the bull streak going. So, like, I'll still watch.
What's the bull streak at?
If you take out COVID, the last time Penn State missed a bowl was the last time they had a losing season because they couldn't make a bowl the sanction years was 2004. So, it's up there.
Crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how Bill O'Brien kept those teams with a winning record, but yeah.
All right, folks. Well, I think that's about every game that I wanted to talk about. Any other games before we wrap this one up?
I have one last one. Okay. So we have Missouri 5-1 at Jordan-Hare at night, 6:45. Ugh. Auburn's 3-3. Is Auburn going to just make our Missouri win look bad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just it's another stereotypical Auburn game.
Of course it is. So here's the thing. I wanted to point
this
out.
This is also I feel like this is also like the Mizzou, like, know your place game too. Like, they're going to drop a game or two somewhere. It's just going to randomly be this one because it's Auburn.
True.
We finally play a conference opponent that's not undefeated this week.
Yeah.
But their only loss is to a team we already beat. So, you know.
Got to be a good feeling.
Bama only loses the bad teams, folks. Bama only loses the bad teams.
True.
So,
unironically true.
I guess we'll see how good or bad Tennessee is this week.
Sneaky game against Tennessee.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, thank you all for listening. And thank you, Rice and Outer. This has been really fun. I really appreciate you guys coming on here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right. And with that, this has been another episode of the Jabbacast. Thank you all. And as always, Roll Tide.
I'm Wisconsin.
We are.
Go Hoosiers.